Hey guys, welcome back to the Birthling Podcast. I just finished listening to our episode with Kira. She's on Instagram at Your Birth Room. She's changed. She used to be what did she used to be? Advocate, something advocacy, because that's what she does. And it's just so funny that these episodes, I probably recorded this in May with her. I forgot, I didn't look, but a while ago. And it's just so funny that these episodes pop up and it's time for them to get published at the kind of coincidentally the same time in my life that I kind of need to hear it again. And this is one of those episodes that I listened to it and I was like, damn, this is crazy because I have just finished my first birth as a doula, not an RN. At the bedside in the hospital that I had all that drama with, right? I was so nervous walking into that hospital to do, to be an advocate there. Not for myself. I wasn't nervous for myself, like I would do a bad job or anything like that, but more so that I didn't want to influence or affect the care that they were going to receive from the nurses there. With my presence, right? That was what I was more nervous about. And I was prepared to leave if I saw that happening. It wasn't until maybe the end, the last nurse we had, that I probably felt that the most. I think maybe she's a newer nurse or whatnot, but I think she was really nervous, or I don't know the right word to say, having me there. I talked to someone that is familiar with the hospital, and she said that that's very common there, that that's how they feel and treat nurse doulas. So I'm like, okay, so maybe it wasn't me. I'm sure it was a little bit about me. I'm sure they were had a lot of words at the nurse's station about me being there. They like to chat, and I just feel like it was probably more misunderstanding of what happened and what, or maybe not, I don't know. A lot of them listen to the episode that if you haven't listened to it yet, go to episode 33, where I discuss the whole story and situation once I decided to leave that hospital. But or I said a mutual disassociation from that hospital. But yeah, I just finished. And a lot of what we discussed today that you'll hear right now with Kiera happened. Like, I had to really stand up and speak a few times. A lot of the times I didn't. I was able to prepare my clients ahead of time to really feel confident to ask the right questions and speak up for themselves when necessary. And for them, that made all the difference, right? And then just my presence there to support them in that was really beneficial. So look, I think this episode more than anything is going to be amazing and very, very educational for a lot of the newer doulas. Yes, for new parents as well. You're going to hear why we believe as a doula advocate and nurse that having a doula and advocate at your bedside in the hospital is vital. And I believe this even while I was bedside nursing. But this episode is just a true, uncensored conversation between us. Then we can get Kiara's really experience insight into being an advocate and what it means, and especially informative for newer doulas who may think that they don't have the right to even speak up or that they're not allowed to speak up, and how that's just not true, how you don't need to be an expert in birth to speak up. And I hope you really get a lot out of it. After you listen, please reach out to me if you have any questions, if you want to share your own stories with me. I love to hear them. I love to debrief with you. I have another doula friend who said, "Do you want to debrief your birth?" I'm like, "Yes, not my birth, my client's birth, but I would like to talk about what happened because we're always trying to improve, and sometimes just talking about it can help with a little bit of the trauma." associated with it. And I actually never got that support as a nurse. So to have that, community and support as a doula now was really beautiful, and I really loved it. So I'm here for you guys as well. Whether you're a new mom that is looking for support, or a family member, a partner, or a doula, whether experienced or not, it's great to have a community. It's great to have a support system. So let's get into it with Kiara. You can find her on Instagram at Your Birth Room. You can also find her at, hold on, I wrote it down, birthadvocacypodcast.com/moms or birthadvocacypodcast.com/doulas, depending on who you are. And you can send her a message or hire her as your advocate as well. I think she's in the Charleston area. Maybe virtual as well. She's just awesome. She's just outspoken and so knowledgeable. So I'm not going to waste any more time. Let's get into it. Welcome to the Birthling Podcast, presented by My Friend's a Nurse. I'm your host, Colette McCulliker, a high-risk labor and delivery nurse right here in sunny California. I'm also an OB-certified specialist, birth educator, lactation expert, and mother of two beautiful daughters. I am passionate about guiding you through the miraculous journey of pregnancy and childbirth, using evidence and history and asking the reason why. I have some incredible medical friends and colleagues, and we're all here to help you navigate this often overwhelming birthing hospital system in the United States. My goal is to gain trust in birth, improve this system, and provide some valuable insights. Let's make this journey a little less daunting and a lot more joyful. Let's get into it. Welcome to the Birthling Podcast, Kiara. I'm so excited to have you. We have become fast friends because I feel like we both have a lot to say, both at the bedside and behind it when it comes to advocating for our clients and for women. And it's a tough, tough battle we have. But so I'm really excited to get into the conversation today. Please, let's just start off by you telling us about who you are, how you got started in the birth world, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, thanks, Clett. Really excited to be here. So as we've been chatting, I really can't keep my mouth shut about birth. Like, we could talk for hours. So I'm Kiara Walsh. I am a doula, a birth educator. My focus is on really just unapologetic birth advocacy. I got started as a doula back in 2021, 4 months after I had my daughter. My home birth like rocked my world in the best way possible. So rewind to 2020, found out I was pregnant 3 days before the world shut down during COVID. And I was like, what the F is actually happening? I was always a get me to the hospital, give me that epidural, like ASAP kind of girl. And then during COVID, we were in New Jersey at the time and found out we weren't going to be able to tour the hospital. I was going to have to birth in a mask without my husband. And I was like, hard pass. That's a no for me. Quickly went down the rabbit hole of, as every doula, watching The Business of Being Born. And I was like, ah, that kind of changes things a little bit. But that's what really got my husband on board with home birth. And then I had a couple friends who had a home birth. And I was like, y'all are insane. Home birth sounds crazy. But did all the research, read all the books, watched all the things. And I was like, I guess we're having this baby at home because I'm not birthing alone in a mask in a hospital without my husband. So that quickly led us down the route to home birth. It was absolutely incredible. I was just shy of 42 weeks when I went into labor with my daughter. I had prodromal labor for 3 days, so I was in labor for 72 hours with start and stop. Turns out she was asynclitic with a nuchal hand, so hence why that took so damn long. But I would do it again over and over again, and I'm actually now in the process of becoming a surrogate because I want to be pregnant again and I want to give birth again. I know, insane. Long story short, I was obsessed with birth after that. Kept reading all the things and went through DONA to get my doula certification. We could do a whole other episode on that. But quickly became a doula, quickly became obsessed with birth, threw myself into birth work. So 4 years now, almost five, I've been a doula. I've supported hundreds of moms through birth and postpartum and quickly got punched in the face with hospital birth and everything that gets thrown in the way of moms and having to help them navigate that. And that's just really what I focus on now is helping moms and doulas just really learn how to navigate hospital birth specifically and just show up unapologetically, not afraid to speak up, not feeling awkward or like you're being a difficult patient. And yeah, just really learning how to find their voice in birth, really.
Amazing. And it takes a lot of education on your part. How did you navigate that first part? Like when you first went into the hospital and you got punched in the face, I know how that punch feels.
Yeah. So I would say like when I was a brand new like baby doula, I just kind of didn't know what to speak. Like it took a hot minute for me to like really get my feet wet a little bit in hospital birth. Cause you know, I went in, I did the hip squeezes, I filled the water bottles, I gave her the honey sticks, and I just did the things that I was told that I was, you know, quote unquote, supposed to do. My doula training told me it wasn't in my scope of practice to speak up, which, spoiler alert, doula do not have a scope of practice. So I was a rule follower in the beginning, right? I was, like I said, I was doing all the things my doula training taught me to do. So I was just kind of going along with it, right? And it took a couple births for me to realize like, wait a second, that didn't need to end in a C-section, or she shouldn't have been induced because she was 39 weeks. There was really no medical reason for her to be induced. So it took a while. It took a couple births. I would say probably a good 6 months of births for me to be like, hold on, like this just isn't sitting right with me. To really be like, I need to kind of take a step back and realize like, what is my scope of practice? Which again, I then realized like, wait a second, doulas are not regulated licensed providers. We do not have a scope of practice. And I am too outgoing and too loudmouth to sit here and like let all of this happen to these moms. So yeah, I would say about 6 months in, I quickly realized like this needs to change. And so I just kind of immersed myself into really helping moms feel, number one, prepared during pregnancy, right? Like it all starts in that prep, but then also continuing that confidence into birth too.
Yeah, it's a really hard transition, especially when you're like, wait a minute, what am I quote unquote allowed to do and not yes. allowed to do? And you don't want to step on toes and you're like, and you're getting a lot of pushback, but your client is looking at you like, what am I supposed yep. to do? Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
So totally.
Huge learning curve. So then tell me like what the word advocacy means to you then, like as an advocate.
Yeah. So advocacy to me means that you are voicing what you want your birth to look like, right? Like, I don't care if you want to be induced. I don't care if you want an epidural. I don't care if you want to have a scheduled C-section. What advocacy means to me is making sure that your choices are respected, that you understand informed consent, like you are given that informed consent. You are not just given like, hey, let's induce because the risk of stillbirth goes up. Okay, it might go up 5.5%, but like, what is the actual risk of that? And really just understanding not only the benefits of a situation or an intervention, but also those risks. And like I said, just really making sure that your voice is heard throughout that conversation. It truly does need to be a conversation, not you being spoken to by a provider or spoken at, I should say.
Exactly. And then giving them the questions or...
Totally.
Or, you know, speaking up and asking clarifying questions. Right.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest things for me that really flipped from me being, like I said, a brand new baby doula to like really stepping into who I am now as a birth advocate and a doula is understanding the whole process, right? Like understanding the whole birth process, right? Like I, from a home birth experience, understood physiological birth. I understood that, you know, if you allow time to happen, if you allow all of these things, now, yes, there are certain situations where we need to step in, but having that full picture, I went into birth work being like, well, I don't know anything about like what's AROM or what's a D-cell or what's Pitocin. I didn't know all of the medical background. So I felt, you know, in the beginning felt like, well, I don't have any leg to stand on. Like I can't speak up because I don't know what any of that means. And what I really educate doulas on now is you don't need to know jack shit about the medical side of birth. What you need to understand is mom being listened to? Is mom being supported? That is what it means to show up as an advocate. You don't need to be an RN. You don't need to be an OBGYN. Like you don't need that medical background to be a good doula. And to me, if a doula is staying quiet and not advocating because she's afraid of that, she's not stepping into her full potential. So again, really understanding and really knowing like you don't need to know anything about the medical side of birth. You just need to show up to make sure that the right questions are being asked, that mom is given that true informed consent. Again, risks, benefits, do you have any questions? Like we've talked about it before, like it's not just a checklist of like, okay, here's the next step. You really need to understand that full picture and that you don't need to have that medical background in order to be a good doula.
Yeah. I mean, having just those set of clarifying questions to speak up. If you're, and I think it's even a little power to you when you come in and you don't know everything.
Exactly.
Yeah, because then you can say, oh, wait, how long would she have then? Because you may know that time is of the essence when you're in the hospital. So if they are suggesting breaking your water, you're like, okay, well, what are we looking for then time-wise? Like, or you may know something, like, what are the risks of breaking your water? So you just asking that for the patient sometimes when she's, and you can look at her, I'm like, do you understand the risk of this? Because I don't even know.
It's actually like one of the things I tell brand new doulas is like, play dumb. Like, even if you know the answer, play dumb and just ask the questions. Because if you're not asking the questions, chances are mom is not going to feel comfortable asking those questions in most of the situations. So again, a doula asking questions and clarifying what the provider is saying is not speaking for the mom. And that is where it gets mixed up so much is, again, we get that scope of practice thrown at us and like, you shouldn't speak for the mom. No, I'm not making decisions for her, but I am making sure that she understands those decisions that are being thrown at her.
And even as a nurse, like I told you I was precepting and I followed the nurse in, this is day one. And she's like, okay, so we need to do a cervical exam now and see where you're at. And that was it. And then she lifted this sheet. She's like, oh, this thing is up. And then she did it. And I'm like standing right there. I was like, what? That's.
I literally get physically angry hearing stories like that. And I've seen it. And again, when I was a brand new doula, I didn't know what to say. I was just like, okay, well, they're the provider, right? Like, but that is literally obstetric violence. It's sexual assault. It literally boils my blood when I hear things like that. And when I see it, if a doctor is coming in and sitting on the edge of the bed and like, hey, we're just going to see where you're at, that is not informed consent at all. If you don't have the opportunity to say yes, no, or maybe, that is not true informed consent. And it just boils my blood so bad.
And how we were trained almost without actually saying the words, it's if they don't say no, that's consent.
Oh my, think about the same situation with sex, right? Like no is no, but yes is yes. Like you have to give informed consent before somebody enters your vagina. Like that literally makes me so angry.
She didn't say no, right? So it's like, but you didn't ask her. Like
I did not ask her.
Asked to touch, like, is it okay if I touch you? Okay, great. You know, I get consent to touch, right? It's not
exactly.
You don't have a license to touch does not mean I get to touch you when I want.
Oh man, it makes me so mad.
And she's my poor preceptor is like, got me as day one. And I'm just, and then we went into the, I didn't say anything. I only said at the time, I was like, are you okay with this exam? Right after she did it. Like,
yep.
I'm not mousy, by the way. And then we go in the nurse's station and I was telling her, oh yeah, I have a podcast. And she was looking and I'm like, I have a few episodes on informed consent and how we get it. And I'm just like really big on that. And she's just like,
I love it.
Yeah, I really try to do that. I'm like, that's
there is no try in informed consent. That makes no sense. You either do or you don't.
I really try to get good. I really try not to violate people and abuse them. I'm like, God. Oh, you got a lot to learn. And honestly, so as a nurse and with this preceptor and with, I mean, all the nurses that I was around, I know where they're coming from. The first 5 years of my training, I was doing the same thing as them because that's how I was trained. And yep. It's very militant. It's very risk avoidant on our part. Mm-hmm. Making sure that we're not sued, that all our T's are crossed, I's are dotted, and our assessments are done, and we're following hospital policies and protocols so that we don't get sued down the line no matter what happens. It's not like, yes, we want to avoid something bad happening, but if something bad happens, we want to make sure that we can prove that we did everything according to policy and standard procedure, that minimal standards. So we're not just saying like, well, you will do your vital signs every hour and we are busy. So we're only going to do it every 8 hours, right? It has to be a standard. So we have to meet that standard and we have to do it to everyone. And we get in our head, like that is a priority over even the discussion, even getting permission. It's like, no, but you're here for us to take care of you. So just let us do it. It's like someone else, I was like, it's like we're treating patients like they're 2 years old, 3 years old, right? Do as I say, don't ask too many questions. You're not going to understand.
Mm-hmm.
intelligent enough and logical enough to make your own decision. So I'm not going to give you the whole thing. A cervical exam, there's so much more to it than just the risk of infection. It's also like, what are you going to get out of this exam? Is the number, are they going to follow with you're still, you're just?
Don't even get me started on that.
You're still 4 centimeters. So maybe it's time that we say, now they have that data to make you feel like you're doing something wrong. It's not going right. And now they're going to set up for the next intervention, whether it's Pitocin, breaking your water, whatever it is. And so you need to be aware before you even have that exam. And this is something that I will teach them before the doctor comes in or when I'm doing virtual coaching. Understand that each thing is not just a physical risk, but also a mental and emotional risk to you as well. The people that you have and you accept into your space, right? Whether it's students, whether it's your mom that is negative, Miss Negative, whoever it is, you need to be really careful because they come with their own sets of risks, whether it's maybe it's physical, but maybe it's emotional and mental. And these doctors that come in and push this, it's like so much more to it and they don't get it. Okay.
So yeah. I mean, the mindset that you touched on, right? Like medically managed birth is fear-based. Like you said, it is a liability. There are hospital policies put in place to prevent providers from being sued. Get that. Totally get it. But that does not mean that birth needs to be medically managed. And that is how providers are trained. And another thing that I tell moms is like, you have to be really cautious and careful of who you're choosing as your provider. Like if you are hiring an OB, that means you are hiring a trained surgeon. OBGYNs are trained surgeons. Now, the difference between that and a midwife, right? Like there are CNMs, there are CPMs, there's a whole, what's it called, spectrum of midwifery, right? And so if you're hiring a midwife, that is somebody who's trained in physiological birth. An OBGYN, unless they have spent time training with midwives, specifically home birth midwives, they have no clue what a physiological birth looks like. And when it's not medically managed, it looks completely different. They are outside of their comfort zone because, again, they don't know what to do with their hands if they're not doing something. So the whole mindset around hospital policies are not law. You can do whatever you want during your birth. It is just important to understand the risks versus the benefits. Even if your doctor or your provider disagrees with you, it is still okay. And you should go with what you feel is best for your birth and your baby.
Right. I mean, policies, like I said, they're put in place for nursing staff. Not even the doctors, but the nursing staff. We are employees of the hospital. And the hospital is going to set that standard procedures so that if they get sued later, they say, well, we held everyone to the same standard. We did everything that we were supposed to do from the recommendations of ACOG and whatever other organization that is running the show and administration, whatever. So just like you're hiring a surgeon, you said, if you go to the hospital, you are also having a nurse join your team. And medical licensed and employed RN that is really good in her scope of practice, which is watching the baby on the monitor, taking your vital signs, assessing for complications, managing your care that the surgeon has given you. Metric advice. I call them they're a very experienced and educated medical advisor and surgeon. Great to have a nurse and a surgeon on your team, right? Or an obstetric expert on your team, of course. But do you always need an RN and a OB on your birth team? You know from your home birth, you do not, right? So when I walk in a room, I'm assessing, do you need me? And what can I then provide? So I told you, like when I see a doula and she has a birth plan and they want to do regular minimal interventions, I'm like, sweet. Okay, cool. I will do my assessments and make sure that you don't need me. And if I feel you need me, then I will bring to you my tools and I will still be following the hospital procedures. I will still be educating you. And if you decline, I'm not going to get mad.
Exactly. Because you don't take it personal.
Why are they always getting so mad?
It's the ego. It comes back to the ego.
Don't be so dumb. But they're like, you're so dumb. You're not following hospital policy. And then I'm just like, oh, these nurses are getting mad because they don't know. They're just very uneducated when it comes to actual birth and what it means to be a woman and a patient with their, I said, I've looked at hundreds of birth plans and they've all made sense to me, all of them. And it's from discussing them with that client, with that patient, with that woman. in the family. Okay, I get it. You don't want me to do one damn thing. Okay, makes sense to me, right? Let's go for it. And then if we need to pivot, if things happen, they are on it. Like, they understand. I talk to them like smart, intelligent human beings that care the most about their baby, and they're able to pivot. I've never had a mom not able to. It's when they're met with this, do as I say, why aren't you doing this? You don't even care. And then the trust is gone. Mm-hmm. And now they really don't want to do it. And now
maybe
harming their baby, but it wasn't really their fault. They just didn't trust you because you were lying to them and you were treating them like 2-year-olds when they're not. And try to get you have a 4-year-old?
I do.
Girl, try to get my 4-year-old to do anything.
I know. Exactly.
That's a lot of warfare. Way easier to talk to intelligent adult human beings giving birth than it is to my 4-year-old. And if I manage that, it's like, I get so riled up. Like, just treat women correctly, you know? And then
The pivot thing, I mean, you make a good point too. So when I do birth planning with moms, I do an ABC birth method. So I do your plan A is like your ideal birth plan, right? Like, if everything were to go exactly right, what would you want your birth to look like? Backup plan is like, okay, if things do have to change, like, what are you okay? What are you comfortable with shifting, right? Like, if you say you don't want to get an IV in triage, awesome. But like, maybe things change and you need an antibiotic because they broke your water and now, you know, you have a risk of infection. Cool. Are you okay with getting an IV to get those antibiotics? Whatever plan B looks like. And then obviously, nobody wants to talk about it, but we always talk about plan C, which is a C-section plan. So you have plan A, which is your ideal plan. You have plan B, which is your backup plan. And then you have plan C, which is your C-section plan. Again, when I was planning my home birth, I spent 0 minutes thinking about a hospital transfer and a C-section. And when I tell you, on hour 65, I was this close to transferring to the hospital because I was done. Spoiler alert, I was in transition. Like, no shit, of course I was done. But like, I did not even think that far because I was only set on plan A. I was like, I'm having this baby at home. Here's what's happening. If I would have gotten transferred to the hospital, I guarantee you I would have been a C-section as soon as I got there. I was in labor. My water hadn't broken yet, but I was in labor for 2 days at that point. Are you kidding me? Like, they would have put me in the OR and, you know, cut Maddie out of me. But planning for that backup plan and that plan C and knowing what you're okay pivoting and what you're not okay pivoting and feeling totally solid and grounded in those. And it's okay if, like I said, if you're hit with resistance from your providers, they don't have to understand why you're making decisions. They just have to respect that those are your decisions, whether they like it or not. So planning for A, B, and C is so important. And because, like I said, when you're hit with that resistance, when you're hit with those questions, you have to feel confident in saying, this is what I'm okay changing. And this is okay what I'm not changing, or this is not what I'm okay changing, and feeling totally confident in that. Because if not, they're going to flip you so fast and they're going to have you start questioning yourself. You have to have that mindset where you're like, I've done my research. I know what I'm walking into. I know what my options are. And I also know that birth is not a roadmap, right? Like, I'm going to age myself here, but you're not printing out MapQuest directions. Like, you're not going from A to B straight shot. Like, things are going to change. So what are you okay changing? And what are you like, no, like, this is what I'm set on. And this is not going to change.
Yeah, that's so smart. I didn't even think of plan A, B, and C. It's about understand. I was going to ask you like how, because we were talking about, you know, nurses come in so angry when you don't want to follow. You don't want to get an IV? What? Like, they don't know how to act. They're like, they start like.
They have an eye twitch.
I'm like, are you okay? Are you like, what's, are you malfunctioning right before my eyes? What's happening? It's like, it's their birth and their baby. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how angry they get. And then they have that, I mean, for a nurse, it's the bully culture is real between us.
Yep.
Even me being more of a holistic type of nurse and patient-centered, and I don't get mad when they say no, and I know how to pivot really well, and I know how to educate. So I feel very, very confident in my care in supporting women however they want to birth, because I've taken that time to really educate myself. And that's why bullies at work don't get me. Like, mm-hmm. They're like, oh, you come off intimidating. I was like, why? Because my shoulders are back and I can have a conversation? That's intimidating? Okay. So then I was going to see, like, so as a doula, and an educator and then working in that environment, when you have a doctor that is being kind of a bully, or nurses that are like, it's me against you and you better do it our way, or you like, don't you love your baby kind of mentality. Like you already mentioned, come in prepared, come in educated, because that's how I, as a nurse, have, and I'm sure you as well, been able to get our backbone and being able to find our voice is through education, through like the podcast, through talking to other experts and finding out, wait, their mentality isn't the only one. It's not always correct. And once women and families as well understand that and get prepared and educated, then they can stand up to those bullies as well. I guess I'm answering the question for you, but you kind of answered it, right? Like, so how would you as a doula, maybe speaking to doulas or even to parents, try to manage that when they're coming in and like trying to steamroll your plan?
I mean, here in Charleston, I have less of an issue with nurses, and it is the providers, truthfully. Now, there are some great providers. I don't like to just put everybody in one category. Most of the time, in my experience, the births that I've attended, the nurses have been 98% awesome. Like, they get it. They understand physiological birth. They understand, like, oh, Kira's here again. Like, we don't really need to do anything. Let me go back to the nurse's station. It's more so, you know, certain set of doctors who come in and, like you said, like, they have their policies, they have their procedures, they've been doing this for 23 years, and how dare we question them? But in reality, I'm like, I know a hell of a lot more about physiological birth than you do, sir. So like, take a back seat. I mean, just having that confidence, I mean, I can't shut up. So like, it's really hard for me to keep my mouth shut. So if I see something, I'm going to say something. And that's why, I mean, I highly recommend, like, no question about it, non-negotiable. Like, parents need to have a doula at their birth. Like, a doula is not an extra expense. A doula does not replace your husband, your partner, whoever. Like, a doula is somebody who is trained in helping you advocate. And your husband, your spouse, your partner, your sister, your mom, whoever is coming with you to your birth, they are just as emotionally invested in your birth as you are. They should not have to take on that extra role. Now, do some people want to take on that extra role? Sure. But are they trained in that? Not necessarily. So that's kind of a side note, but highly recommend doulas at births, like, non-negotiable, because you do need that person coming in and advocating for you. So if you have the provider coming in saying, no, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, it's having that doula ask those questions, right? So, hey, what is that going to change if we do that? Is it okay if we wait an hour? Or, you know what? She understands the risk and the benefits of that, but she doesn't want to do that. She's declining at the time. This is going to be a total side note. One of the worst births that I was ever at, and not worst births because of mom, worst births, my interaction with the provider. It's the one I was telling you about before we started, is I got the hand in the face, the shush, you're just a doula, take a back seat kind of thing. Mom was in the hospital. She was going for a VBAC. So she was going through their trial of labor. She was doing awesome. She was not consenting to cervical checks until she was about 7 centimeters. She's like, I just need to know like where I'm at. So she consents to the cervical check. It goes great. Doctor's like, okay, you're 7, about plus 1. Cool. Awesome. Let's keep going. Doctor comes back about 30 minutes later, checks her again. I don't even remember at that time if doctor consented to a cervical check, but checks her. Oh, you're still a 7 and station's still about plus 1, which again, mindset, like, that plays tricks with mom's brain. Like, she is like, okay, great. I'm not making progress. Like, what does that mean? And she was there for a VBAC. So like, mindset kind of got fucked at that point. So doctor leaves, comes back in about an hour. She consents to another cervical exam. This one was really, really rough. And I mean, like, I'm sure you've seen it, like, elbow deep, like, deep in mom. Mom had an epidural at that point, but you could tell, like, the pressure was just really, really uncomfortable. Doctor checks her. I think she was like an 8 at that point. The doctor's like, you're only an 8. That language, it just kills me. Doctor leaves. Mom's like, I do not want another cervical check. Like, I just don't. And I was like, cool, like, crystal clear, got you. Like, no problem at all. Doctor comes back in, probably like another hour or so later, goes to sit down on the bed and like, doesn't even say anything, like, puts the glove on, like, goes to sit down on the bed and like, goes to lift up the sheet. And I was like, you know what? Actually, she doesn't want, and mom was mid contraction at this point. So like, I'm speaking up at that point. Like, first of all, why would you go to check her like during a contraction? Like, slow your roll. Mom's mid contraction. And even though she has the epidural, she's still breathing through it because, as you know, epidurals don't completely take away the pain all the time. She had a hot spot in one of her hips. So she was focusing on the contraction. And I was like, you know what? Actually, she doesn't want to consent to any cervical exams. you know, for the rest of her labor. And I get like the look like, who the hell are you to say that? So long story short, doctor waits for mom to have a contraction. She goes to see like, okay, we're just going to check to where you are. Mom's like, actually, I said, I don't want any cervical exams. And then that's when it switched. Like that's when doctor looks up at the monitor and was like, well, baby's having D cells. Like out of where? Like that came out of nowhere. There were no mentions of D cells at all throughout any point in her labor. Baby was looking great. Mom was doing great. So then we get the D cells thrown around. And doctor's like, if we don't check you, like, we're going to have to go back for a C-section. And I'm just like, what just happened? Like, just because mom declined the cervical check, now we're getting D-cells. Now we're getting threats of the OR, right? So mom's like, you know what? I don't want any checks. So doctor leaves, comes back with a medical director and is like, if you don't consent to a cervical check, we're rushing you back for an emergency C-section because your baby's having D-cells. At that point, it's just intimidation after intimidation. And I was like, you know what? Oh, actually, then at that point, mom was like, please leave. Like she's trying to focus on her contractions. She's trying to focus on birthing her baby. And they're coming in with all of this and bringing in the medical director. So she asks them to leave. They don't leave. And I said, she would like you to step out of the room. Like, again, I can't keep my mouth shut. Like I'm not afraid to say that. She asked them, they said they didn't leave. And so I said, she would like you to leave the room. They leave. Doctor comes back with a literally like an AMA form, an against medical advice form that they literally typed up on like Google Docs. I swear to God, it was the least professional looking document I have ever seen in my life. So doctor comes in and it says, if you're not going to consent to a cervical check and you're not going to consent to a C-section, we have to have you sign this form. And at that point, again, let me back up. When I asked them to leave, that's when I got the shush, you're just a doula, hand in my face. I saw red. It was a whole thing. So they eventually leave. They come back with this really janky AMA form, which I don't know why there's not a template. They have mom sign like mid-contraction. She's like, just get out of my face. And they throw it my way on the clipboard. And they're like, well, we need you to sign this too. So I was like, whatever. Like, here I go. Here's my signature. Have at it. They leave. Doctor comes back in like 20 minutes later because mom says she's feeling pressure because she's progressing. So nurse, I think, calls doctor. Doctor comes back in, says mom's feeling pressure. Doctor's like, okay, go ahead and remove the catheter so that she can push. Nurse goes to remove the catheter and there's the teeniest, tiniest little bit of blood in this catheter, right? Doctor's like, your bladder is ruptured. Emergency C-section right now. And I'm thinking like, it is normal to see blood in a vaginal delivery. So there's a little bit of blood in the catheter. Mom's a little bit freaked out at that point because again, she's there for a VBAC. She understands the risks of a uterine rupture. She understands all of the risks that come with the VBAC. That kind of spooks her. So good job, provider. You did your job with scaring mom. They wheel her back for a C-section. They don't allow me to go back because of the AMA. Comes back. I meet her back in recovery. Would you believe no bladder rupture? It is just a vaginal tear from the very aggressive cervical checks that were done. And at that point, that was the birth that I was like, nope, like there is no more nice doula. I'm here to really make some noise now. And that's where I really shift from like, again, just going in and supporting births to like really advocating and speaking up, because that for me was like 100% not okay. To be so confident in, if you don't consent to the cervical check, you're getting a C-section. And then to be like, your bladder ruptured. And to say that with, she said it with her chest. Like she was like, that is a bladder rupture. And I was like, no, it's not. And that was just side note, had to get into that story because that was just the one birth that just completely flipped how I show up as a doula on its head.
Oh my God.
I don't even know how I got into that story, but there we are.
I'm glad you did. I'm feeling so many emotions because that is just unfortunately common when you say no to something as simple as a cervical exam. You think it's simple. No, it's not.
Yep.
Now they don't like that you said no to them. So now they're going to come in there and they're going to use all their fear tactics because they're scared for some reason.
Yep. Oh, the bully. That's how we got started. The bully's in. Yes. That is like my bully story. Yep.
Like no clarifying on what the details actually mean. How much time do we have? Like, what does it look like when a rupture is happening? Is there pain?
Yeah.
It doesn't happen without a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. The moms, when they're intuitive and they know, I mean, she's had an epidural, you said, so it's going to be a little difficult, but you still know.
Exactly.
I knew with an epidural when my water broke. I could feel it. Right? Mm-hmm. No things, but just that pisses me off so much.
Yeah, it was the one where, again, like the hand in the face, the shush, you're just a doula. I mean, when I say I saw red, like I saw red. I was like, me and this lady are going to go toe to toe.
Yeah, I'm sure you've thought about it. So if you could go back, if you're the Julie you are now and you were put into that room again, what could you have even done different? Right? I feel like you're like, she was a badass. Like she did all she could.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, I think the one thing that I could question more, and I mean, this is the stuff that eats Jewel is alive, right? Like we leave births and we're like, what could I have said differently? What could I have done differently? Is just questioning the bladder rupture more. Like instinctually, I knew it was not a bladder rupture. Like there was not enough blood or any other signs, right, that it was a bladder rupture. So if there was anything that I could go back and do differently, it would be to question that a little bit more. So again, it all comes back to asking questions. I don't care if you have to play dumb, like, what is a bladder rupture? What does that mean? And I mean, they then spent, what, 25, 30 minutes getting her prepped. Like, is that actually an emergency? And again, like, just questioning, questioning, questioning. Like, you cannot ask enough questions in birth. So on one hand, yes, that's the stuff that eats doulas alive and, you know, burns doulas out. But go back to, like, again, really just debriefing. What could you have done differently? And not necessarily what could you have done better, right? But like, what could you have done differently? And I think at that point, it would have been questioning the bladder rupture. You know, okay, if we're not rushing her back right now, like, is there a true emergency? Or is this just, you know, an ASAP? Like, let's just do this because we want to move on to the next.
Right. Or maybe discussing if there's a little blood, if she's feeling that pressure, like, is at a certain point, I would have been like, okay, at this point, the baby could be right there and we're headed mm-hmm. back.
Well, funny story. Baby was right there. Baby was already like at her pelvic bone. So, what's that?
She didn't want a cervical exam.
She did not want another cervical exam, but they did mention to her during her C-section that baby was like stuck under her pelvic bone because baby was lowering, right? Like baby was descending in the vaginal canal. She was feeling that pressure for a reason, and having the nurse remove the catheter to help her push was great. But then again, doctor saw the blood and was like, oh, there's my green card to move forward with the C-section.
Yeah, because when I heard removing the catheter, to me, that was like, then she's close to delivering. So for them to rush her back then, like, and it's 20 minutes, so it's not fetal distress. It's not
exactly
any type of rupture. Yeah. It's just convenience for them and because they're pissed that she said no to anything. Well, we'll show her.
Exactly. And moms don't want to believe that, like, right? Like first time moms are like, well, they can't do that. Like, that's not legal. But like, I think being in the hospital, you would be shocked. And I'm sure you have story after story after story, but like, I see it so often. It's an ego play. It's a power play. And it's really, really messed up. And some of the stuff you see in the hospital when you go in unprepared or you don't know the right questions to ask. And it's just a power play and it's a bully move. And I think moms would be shocked to understand and know how often it happens.
I still get shocked sometimes. I have my own doctor, right? She comes in and the patient is coming for a repeat C-section. She had one that's a few years, 7 years ago, right? She had her first 7 years before. She comes in and she's all scheduled. So I'm the nurse that, and I'm training, right? I've my 3 days at this hospital. So I'm setting her up in pre-op and she is like, moaning and groaning through her contractions. I'm like, girl, you are contracting. And I put her on the monitor and she's contracting probably every 5 minutes at this point. And she's really having to breathe through them. And I was like, have you discussed the option of a VBAC with your doctor? Or do you want to move forward with the C-section? Or is this something that, because you're probably in early labor right now. I am maybe very early, but before I continue, I just want to make sure that you're informed on your options. And she looks at me with bright eyes and she's like, do you think I could? Like, she,
I love it.
Yeah. She's like, I would love that. She's like, I would love to try a vaginal delivery. And she's like, whew. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I'm really feeling them. And and something about sometimes, like we always say fight or flight, your labor could stall when you get up to the hospital. But for some, coming to the hospital, you actually relax. It's almost like your brain goes, I'm safe now. And you start going into labor on your own. So it could go either way. And she just seemed to start contracting. And I was like, well, that's a great question for your doctor to discuss. Like, you have that option if you want to. I don't know your entire medical history. Let me look through your chart. But if you want that option, I will let your doctor know. And I naively go. I'm like, hey, I was like, she's contracting in there. I don't know if you've discussed an option for a VBAC, but she's really interested. Maybe you want to go chat with her. And she just like rolls her eyes. She's like, she looks at her watch because it's her lunchtime and she's ready to just go deliver this baby, right? And she's like, oh, okay, I'll go talk to her. And she comes in and right away she notices that she's like moaning through. She's like, oh, you are contracting. Okay. And she's like, well, do you think I could have try to have a VBAC? I am contracting. And she's like, well, I can check you. We can see, you know, how you are if you really want it. And she was like, that's how she said, if you really want to. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, yeah, I'm open for that. And so she checks her, like the check is like 2 seconds really mm-hmm. quick. And she's like, you are very closed and it's very tight.
They really emphasize that, don't they?
Very tight. And if you notice, your baby is very big, much bigger than your first.
Oh, right. Don't get me started on the big babies. I delivered a 9-pound, 2-ounce baby at home with no medication. Like, it can be done.
She came in with this guise of being like, I'm on your side. I'm on your side. You want to do a VBAC? Let's try. Oh, yeah. It's just, I don't know. It's not, I would love to, but I don't think you're going to go through labor for days. And then it's just going to end up in a C-section because there's no way this baby's going to fit through that tight vagina. And,
oh my God.
And they're like, what? And I'm looking at her and I'm like, well, damn, now I got to fire this doctor because how the hell am I ever going to trust her to take care of myself? I was like, oh, well, good to know. And we ended up, you know, she's like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever you suggest. I think you're right. She's very, like, the patient was very, like, just, I don't want to say submissive, but very, okay, whatever you think. And very polite and, you know, bless
her. They're not me.
And
I'm telling you, when I get pregnant with the surrogacy journey, these doctors are not going to want to see me coming because they are not ready. They are not ready. And I mean, I'm scared shitless to give birth in a hospital, right? Like, my only experience is home birth, but I'm like, I just have to teach myself what I teach all these moms and ask all of the questions, but they are not going to love me for sure.
And have that support at your side that can fill in the blanks for you. That ended up being 6 pounds, 4 ounces.
Exactly. I can't.
And she ended up, because she had her first her first birth was a primary C-section, right? She ended up having some complications because of her own medical history. And she ended up in ICU with fluid in her lungs and unable to breathe. Mm-hmm. And she was very scared about that. The doctor did not take that into consideration whatsoever. So yeah, she ended up going after the second one, having complications. Her oxygen levels were not getting up over 90. And I was struggling and I was training, by the way, and my preceptor had to go triage people. So I was all alone trying to get consults, trying to get, you know, pulmonary in there and cardiac in there and doing EKGs and finding out what's wrong with this poor mom. She ended up getting sent to telemetry for anesthesia, you know, issues that were never really discussed with her. And it was so sad, like, because I knew it was the doctor's convenience.
Yep. And I mean, it's the whole intervention, like, right, slippery slope, the cascade. It all starts with, again, was that C-section necessary? All the way going back to when moms are 39 weeks and they're at their appointment with their doctor and like, let's just go ahead and get your induction scheduled. You know, let's just go ahead and get it on the calendar so you can meet your baby, right? And then you show up, your cervix is closed. You're not dilated at all because, shocker, you should not be dilating until you are in labor. So moms get discouraged because they consent to a cervical check at their 39 week and they're like, well, damn, I'm not even a centimeter dilated. And it's like, well, sis, you shouldn't be because you're not in labor. And it all starts with that induction, right? You show up, they give you Cytotec, they give you a couple rounds of Cytotec, right? Like, you know the drill. Then, you know, that causes a lot of cramping. Then they put you on the Pitocin. Then the Pitocin jacks up your contractions. You're in a lot of pain. You didn't want the epidural, but now you get the epidural. Then baby has D cells. Like, it's literally the same story every single time. And when you can rewind and start at your 20-week appointment knowing these things and understanding these things and asking these questions, that's when you can flip the narrative. But I'm telling you, when moms show up for these 38, 39-week inductions and are there and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to meet my baby. And then it's like, well, girlfriend, strap in because it's going to be a bumpy ride.
I know. There's and when they come in without a birth plan or without education, I'm like, God, I just see the two different ways it can go. And when they're educated and they come in with a doula and they know the questions to ask, it's way harder for us to bulldoze or bully you or make it like birth our way. We do have a plan, right? Like we have our checklist that we want done. You're coming in, we're putting you on the monitors, we're taking your vital signs, we're putting in the IV, we're drawing a CBC and a type in screen, we're getting you, you know, we'll get you a peanut or we'll get you a birthing ball to make it like, put you in a gown.
Look at us being holistic. peanut ball.
Let's go. You know, we'll get you into a hospital gown like you're sick, and then we'll have orders already placed. We already have orders for you. When you walk in, we already know what the doctor wants us to do, and we don't even know what you look like yet.
Yep.
So all we need is to put on the monitor, and we need a set of contractions. So we need 3 to 5 contractions in the 10-minute episode for it to be adequate. And otherwise, we're going to suggest Pitocin because your uterus is not working hard enough. Yet, I have been able to see many births that were without Pitocin that were maybe every 5 to 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
They were just like powerful. And that baby, it was exactly what that baby needed. But on our little parameter.
It doesn't fit in the textbook, right? Like it's not a part of the plans.
But don't ever stop speaking up and.
Oh, you don't have to worry about that.
Telling it how it is. When I find it difficult, it's not always easy. I'm going to be looking to you and I hope vice versa, because we need our little community of like outspoken birth workers. And because we say the truth and we say how it is and we're not scared of it, but where can we find you and what services are you providing for our moms?
Yeah. So I'm over on Instagram most of the time at Birth Advocacy Podcast. I share how to advocate as a mom, how to advocate as a doula. So birthadvocacypodcast.com/moms is where they can find, moms can find resources and freebies and listen to my podcast. And then birthadvocacypodcast/doulas is where you can find all the goodies for doulas. Right now, I am working on something very exciting. Can't really share too many details yet. Definitely my Instagram is where they'll find that first. So again, that's Birth Advocacy Podcast. But lots of goodies coming soon, but there are freebies on my website that doulas and moms can snag just to kind of get their feet wet with advocacy, because like I said, it's not talked about enough. So
it's not.
That's where we're at.
Yeah, girl. Yes. Perfect. Okay. Go find her. I'll leave all those links in the show notes as well. And is there any last like thing you can leave us with? A little tip?
Yeah, I would say don't be afraid to ask the questions. If I were to give you like the number one question to ask as a doula or as a mom is, you know, how is that going to benefit this birth, right? So what are the risks of that? What are the benefits of that? So again, asking that question, or like, what is that going to change? I think that question, if I had to give you one question, every intervention, what is that going to change? If a provider comes in to do a cervical check, what is that going to change? If they ask to break the water, what is that going to change? So again, if you had to remember one question in your birth or as a doula, what is that going to change? I think that would be my biggest takeaway. And just don't be afraid to ask the questions. You don't need to have a medical background to advocate for birth.
Love it. Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Kira.
Thank you, Colette. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to My Friends a Nurse presents the Birthling Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and found it valuable. Before we go, a quick reminder. The information shared on this podcast is for educational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. Always consult with your healthcare provider for any medical concerns or questions. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your friends. Your support helps us reach more people and continue to bring you great content. Until next time, stay healthy and stay informed.